With Eleanor Haney at the convention. This is Jay Kleinberg doing the interviewing. It's the 19th of November, 1977. Eleanor, do you want to give us your name, address, and what you're doing?
Okay. I generally go by Ellie rather than Eleanor. And I'm from Minnesota. I teach in a church-related college in Moorhead, Minnesota. But this year I'm in Cambridge, Massachusetts on a research resource associate program in women's studies. And so I'm spending the year in the East.
How did you come to be interested in the women's movement?
I suppose I became interested in it the way many other women did. I was active in civil rights in the 50s and early 60s. When I moved out to Minnesota, I became active in Native American concerns, and two other women and I set up a daycare center for a local Indian association, and just moved from that into an awareness that I was working on everybody else's rights and neglecting some of my own.
What made you concerned about your own rights?
I don't know that I could say any one particular thing. I think in part, it was a personal kind of thing. I'd gotten married late, in the mid-30s, and had a son even later, close to 40, and found myself back into some of the patterns that I thought I'd completely escaped. I can remember, much to my chagrin now, when I first read Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, back in 1963, I said, this doesn't apply to me. I'm not caught in that kind of trap. And even though I continued my career, I still was struggling with some of those same issues. And so I developed more a personal sense of connectedness with other women in the situation that they were going through. And then in general, from reading and, you know, looking at it more theoretically.
Did you have a sense of this was something that you ought to do for other women, or was it something you perceived as doing for yourself?
Both. Very much both, from the very beginning. I can remember, this was just a couple years ago, we were at Concordia College. We were trying to work something out so that a woman would be interviewed for an assistant academic dean position. And I was getting ready to go to a meeting, and I felt this great intensity about it. And I stopped to think, why am I fighting so hard for this, for her, was the way I put it. And then I said to myself, I'm not fighting just for her, I'm fighting for me too. And so I think it's the connection of both.
Do you think you experienced, either teaching or in the general community, significant discrimination or negative attitudes because you were a woman? Were you aware of it?
Yeah. It's the subtle kinds of discrimination, not the overt. So far as I know, at least since I've been married, since my husband and I both started teaching at the same time with the same rank and at the same salary, so far as I know, I haven't been discriminated against in, you know, overt kinds of terms like that.
Have you gotten raises at the same rate he has?
Raises, yes. Promotion, no. And that was in large part, because I was a woman. I could document that if I had to. But I think, you know, more difficult to deal with are the more subtle kinds of discrimination. I was often the only woman in a seminar at Yale University where I did my graduate work in religion. And religion has been a predominant.
When were you at Yale in religion?
60 to 65.
You know Peter Williams? I guess he would be there afterwards. We should talk about this off the tape.
Okay.
I know people from the religion department at Yale.
Oh, really? Yeah. 60 to 65. And I taught a lot of the divinity school students, so I probably know some of the ones that you know. But, you know, that kind of thing. And just being the only woman and not having learned to think fast, to as people say, to listen to oneself and what one is going to say next, rather than really listening to what the other person is saying. It was just a sense of intimidation that was not conscious on the part of the men in the group at all, but, you know, it just came through.
Do you think that the women's movement has changed your life in any way?
Tremendously, in some respects. It has given me a place to stand, to integrate many of the kinds of things I have been concerned about all my life. So it's provided a unifying dimension to my general orientation toward life, and has at the same time helped provide me with much more self-confidence than I've ever had before.
Are you satisfied with the way the convention's going so far?
That's a loaded question. Yes and no.
Oh, yes and no. I'll double right back to you.
I'm pleased that pro-ERA and generally pro-reform, if not revolution, groups are in the majority here, and that should say something to Congress and to the President. I think even though it was abused at the state level, that nevertheless it's by far the fairest representation of women that this country's ever assembled. It's probably the fairest representation of any group of people that the country has ever assembled. I'm being interviewed. So I'm pleased at that. I think the chair has bent over backwards to try to be fair and all that kind of thing. What disturbs me is that the wrong, well, no, that's not correct. I will say it that way, that the wrong people are being honored.
Who should be honored, is being honored,
people,
and why are they the wrong people?
People like Wilma Scott Heide, Eileen Hernandez, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of now people and other women groups, people who, you know, from 10 years, 15 years earlier started putting their lives on the line, and it's a result of what they did back then that this kind of thing is possible today. But who gets recognition? Margaret Mead gets a standing ovation, and she's not been all that sympathetic. And I just think that's grossly unfair, and I really feel deeply about that, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to be interviewed, so I could get that on record.
Well, it's legitimate to get those kinds of things on record, I should think. Are you saying then that the toilers in the vineyards are not being recognized?
That's right. That's right. And the people who have suffered. I mean, I know people now who can't get a job because they were too radical at that time. Now it's become more respectable.
Has it become less radical?
I don't think this is particularly radical. I think it's an appropriate thing for where women are. I think we have... Well, I see feminism as a revolution in values as much as anything else, okay? And what we're doing is trying to open up space for women primarily within the existing value structures. At a thing on war this morning, people were talking about arms reduction, and I'm all for arms reduction, but until we deal with the kinds of views of power, sense of masculinity, improving one's manhood, a hierarchical structuring of things, the conditions that lead to resistance to arms reduction are still going to be there, even if we could pull off arms reduction. So that we're tinkering within a structure that itself needs to be changed. And that's not to say that the tinkering is not important. It's just to say, I guess, that we've got to do a both-and kind of thing all the time.
Well, isn't that true of any general movement, though?
Yeah. I think it probably is. I guess I don't want to elaborate on that particular thing.
Okay. What do you expect to come out of this convention?
I think a very clear mandate to Congress and the President. I would also hope, a very clear mandate, and then I would hope some provision written into the resolutions more than, although maybe including, the cabinet position, to implement the resolutions and to hold people in Congress accountable for what's happened here. Somehow to hold them accountable to the people who've been here, to the women who've been here. And if they continue to ignore the resolutions, then I think the time has come for a return to the old 1776 principle of no taxation without representation or something. I mean, because it'd be very, very clear, you know, to be no equivocation about it.
Do you think a tax boycott, are you proposing that, that we adopt a tax boycott?
I think that could be a very useful kind of thing to do, yes.
What do you intend to do once you leave the convention?
Well, immediately go back to Massachusetts and continue my research, which is a book on a feminist ethic using Wilma Scott Hyde as a major figure and some of the other people who worked with her. So I really see the book as not a purely academic kind of thing either, but it's also a political act. And I want to get as much done on that as I can this year that I have off from teaching responsibilities.
Has the convention changed your thinking in any way, or do you feel as if, as some people have, that it's changed their lives?
No. I think it, you know, I can be very moved by the kinds of things that happen here, and I'm just very, very pleased to see this many women aware. You know, it does indicate that the feminist movement has succeeded to a much larger extent, perhaps, than some people had thought. And so that's very gratifying. But I know it certainly hasn't changed my life. I get too impatient at what's going on here.
What is, if you had to single out one thing that's the most important for women to achieve, or what would it be?
Is there one single one thing? I have about two things.
Okay, cluster of issues.
I have three things.
Pick it.
Self-confidence. The Indian or whatever it is sort of saying, women hold up half the sky. I mean, a sense of that one's place is in the world and one has something to contribute. Really deep down in one's guts, believing that. A sense of sisterhood, a sense that the kinds of things that have happened to us and the kinds of contributions we have to make can transcend and ought to transcend the other kinds of lines that are in force and that keep us divided from each other. Race, class, age, you know, etc. Income. So those two things. And then I guess the third thing would be to move toward establishing really a transformation of human values.
What does that mean? It's a lovely sounding phrase, but what do you mean by it?
Well, I work, when I think of a feminist ethic, I think with the paradigm of friendship. And friendship, although there's a lot of rhetoric about friendship is not very high on priorities of people in this country and perhaps throughout the world. And friendship assumes a kind of equality, a kind of distance, a kind of respect, a kind of independence, a kind of, it's a non-hierarchical sort of relationship. And I'd like to see that beginning to happen between women and men. Women and women, it has to happen in order for it to happen between women and men, between women and the earth. So on and so forth. And I think, you know, a simple word like friendship demands at its very core radical social change, primarily a change in power relationships between people and between people and the earth.
Mm-hmm. How do you think we accomplish that? Simply by talking about it or telling people about it?
You know, the definition of a revolutionary? Revolutionary is one who explains and explains and explains. So I think talking is important, sure. Consciousness raising is very, very important. But, you know, direct action, those kinds of things are important too, just as important. Changing the laws, which is what we're trying to do here, that's important. Any way is important, with one qualification to that. It seems to me that we're most revolutionary movements who really come with a vision of a more humane life, where they fall apart is in a too complete a separation of ends and means. The ends are there, beautiful, but the means in trying to get to those ends, they move into a kind of pragmatism that the end justifies the means, and we end up doing the same kinds of things the oppressors have done all along, and we never can get there. And so that I think as feminists, I think central to a feminist ethic is to realize, sure, the end justifies the means up to a point, but the means also shape the ends. And so that whatever specific kinds of things we do, whether it's direct action or talking or whatever, we confront, we're honest, we're open, we're bold, but we are not destructive. We're not, or we don't, we refuse to play by the old rules, so that we begin to institute more honesty, more openness, more caringness, right, in and through the midst of confrontation and negotiation and all those kinds of things. Does that make sense?
Yes. Saying? Yes.
So that we have more of an integration of ends and means in the way we go about things.
And you think that the women's movement can achieve this?
I hope so.
Okay, well, thank you very much.